Oi, oi, it's your boy, the Spike Dudley of Being Studly, and I'm checking in real quick this week because I've run out of time. I wrote a Shara Bullet article, or Shara Magomedov. He's being billed as Shara Bullet. It's much like Mauricio Shogun and Mirko Krokop because they didn't trust people to spell Filipovic. But in writing that article, which is available for everyone, which you can check out on the Patreon or on thefightprimer.com, I ran things a bit tight. So we're talking about the fights going on this weekend. Don't know how long I'll go, but I'm going to have to stop at some point to edit this to get it out in time before the fights. Honestly, not a bad card. But if you remember the story of this card, there's a reason it's not that bad. The Saudis paid, what was it, 16 million, 20 million for an event? The UFC offered them Shamil Gaziev, headliner. And they went, no, rightly. And that was the headliner to one of the worst Apex cards. I don't want to say ever, because we had like four more that were worse since then, but of the year. And now the UFC's back and they've actually brought some star power. Is it in compelling fights? Well, you be the judge. Tons of moving and shaking on this card. It's been ridiculous. They booked Khamzat Chimaev for the main event. Being Khamzat Chimaev, he promptly got ill. But just in time to pull out and ruin the event, almost. Yeah, I kind of feel for this guy because he did a while ago say that he didn't want to fight anymore. And then Kadyrov convinced him, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, to continue. But it does remind me of that thing that we were talking about the criticisms of the traditional Thai training style. I think it was Damien Trainer who said that. So, some other coaches have said it too. But like the Thai training style is so heavily weighted towards people who can withstand two long runs a day plus training. You know, stuff that just breaks you down if you don't have particularly good resistance to that sort of injury, which is basically luck. You know, there are probably guys who could end up being better because it's so removed from the technical skill of fighting and the physical skill of fighting to just be able to do ridiculous endurance exercise for many hours a week. And with Chimaev, it seems to be like not the same thing, but a similar thing. Absolute killer in the ring, but is also like almost dying every time he goes into camp. So he had this fight booked with Robert Whittaker, one of the top dogs of middleweight, only lost to Adesanya and Dricus du Plessis. So really good matchup, really good stepping stone for Chimaev if he wins. And sadly that fell through, which is sad because it was a pretty interesting matchup. Robert Whittaker's, a couple of his best performances have been against, or, you know, in his prime, were against strong wrestlers who were supposed to be able to, or strong grapplers who were supposed to be able to take him down and mog him, and Jacare and Yoel Romero. And when they tried to take him down, or did take him down, he looked sensational in those three fights. Romero twice. But then Dricus du Plessis, who you would not consider, you know, you wouldn't consider him the grappler that Jacare is, and you wouldn't consider him the wrestler that Yoel Romero is. He came in and he partly worked Robert Whittaker out, but also we're asking how much is Robert Whittaker's age and mileage catching up to him. Now we get to ask that question again, but against Ikram Aliskarov, who has none of the hype that Khamzat Chimaev does, which is a little bit sad, but he got knocked out by Khamzat, so that's the story there. I wrote a big article on him last week, you can go check it out, but relies very heavily on his jab, and if he doesn't feel he can out-jab the opponent, jab them to death on the feet, he jabs until he can get the double leg, or he can enter a clinch and hit the Mongolian throw or a big trip off the cage. But from what I've seen, he has to get his hands going. So your main questions are, how does he do against someone like Rob Whittaker, who wants to stand on the outside and lance in with single jabs and single 1-2s, and then the odd, maybe once a fight, will bring out the 1-2 high kick. Honestly, Rob Whittaker's style in recent years, I have not enjoyed as much as when he was sort of the mix of the... If you remember, he came in on tough and he had like the low lead hand and he's all about the left hook and he wasn't anything like the fighter he is now. But it was about the middle stage when he was champion and that, around that time, I really enjoyed Rob Whittaker. The like tapering down entirely to point fighting 1-2s and the odd takedown if you feel like you can get it. Haven't enjoyed that as much. It's impressive that he still does it against the highest level opponents in the game. But I don't think it's going to age particularly well as a style to have so little variety and rely so much on speed at distance. That being said, he still shows touches of smarter fighting. You know, the double jab and the faking into jabs and being able to double up and cover more ground without opening himself wide open, like he did. You know, in the first Israel Adesanya fight, he lost that fight, and people were convinced it was a levels thing. And I was saying he fought that fight really badly. He realized that he couldn't get to Adesanya easily, and he just started like running at him, sprinting at him. And then the rematch, he starts using a double jab, and he's actually landing these jabs like right on Adesanya's mouth. Loses a, was it a split decision or at least a hotly contested decision? Paulo Costa surprised him with a shockingly decent jab for the first time ever. Keeps leaning back out of the way of things when Whittaker comes in. So Whittaker starts doubling up and using feints first to get him moving and then hit him. And that's what you like to see. What I don't really enjoy is like the Darren Till, Kelvin Gastelum, bounce, 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 slap the lead hand. 1-2. I can. I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of like sort of point karate style point fighting, but I'm not a fan of it for such a well-rounded fighter to taper his whole game down to that. But then Alaskarov is not exactly like a maximalist in his repertoire. Jab, occasional right hand, level change, bit of clinch work along the fence, Kimura, everything on top is about the Kimura and the quarter mount or the three-quarter mount. I think that some of Alaskarov's strength is hidden in the way that he chooses to fight. If you watch his fight with Khamzat Chimaev, yes, he gets knocked out. But in that fight, Khamzat Chimaev tries to take him down, gets him to the fence, gets the body lock, steps inside, or tries to step inside. And Alaskarov is great. He's got the overhook. Did he keep wrist control or did he get the body lock? I can't remember. But he's keeping his knees together, keeping Chimaev out of the middle space. He starts digging those little knees in like Islam Makhachev. This guy is from the same team and he is apparently for a long time been training with, or was training with, Abdulmanap Nurmagomedov. But he's digging those little knees and then he steps through for the throw attempt, the Haragoshi, and Khamzat like dives to sprawl out on his front and comes up and Khamzat's chasing him with the body lock, but he gets himself off the fence and he does break away eventually, and he's one of the few opponents that when Chimaev tried to take him down, he couldn't. But then you don't attack people from putting your back to the fence, you counterattack. You know, he's not going to go out there, grab the overhook and then pull Robert Whittaker on top of him against the fence, like, come on, lean on me, and then throw him. His entries are a little bit like jab and then lean way out. You know, you can watch against Tilulin and it's not particularly well hidden even. It's just that he jabs Tilulin just enough that Tilulin's like, right, we're swinging now, because Tilulin's not very good or clever. I was deep in a Kimura from side control today, and I thought about trying to grip my hands underneath my butt like Tilulin did in that fight against Alaskarov, where I clowned on him because I was like, that's a defense that literally makes it easier to Kimura you, because you've already locked your hands together behind your back. You want to keep your hand, if they've unlocked your hand and put it to the floor, you want to keep it on the fucking floor. You want to make sure they don't get your back off the floor so they can't put it behind your back. But Tilulin like lifts his legs and butt over the top of his hands and then locks his hands together. And he's easily just rolled onto his side and then his hand's already behind his back. Fucking, oh. Anyway, yeah, I thought about doing it today deep in this Kimura. And then I thought, you know what? That's stupid. I'll just keep trying to get my head out and keep my back to the mat. But what's the point of being a hobbyist who can train as much as, or as little as he wants without doing stupid shit? You've got to do stupid shit sometimes. Go watch the Craig Jones 25 minutes of Craig Jones escaping positions at seminars, where he does these stupid fucking side control escapes, which then they're not that stupid because he did one to Merigali in the gi back in the day. But when you watch them, you go, that's bullshit. That would never work. And then he does it over and over and over again to people. So Denis Tilulin, possibly on his way to a genius idea. He just needs to try that a few more times against people Kimuraing him. Anyway, yeah, it's kind of intriguing because both these guys, I kind of want to say, like, the styles are interestingly similar. We're led by the jab. We use the jab to set up the takedown attempts when it's opportune, and we use the top control to win rounds when we can. Granted, they look very different, and the ways that they do them are significantly different, but at the heart of it, it's about the same, and they're both dealing with someone who's very hard to take down opportunistically. So I'm not sure what to expect from this. It could be Ikram Alaskarov just comes out and blows the doors off, and we go, oh, God. Maybe we should pay more attention to Ikram Alaskarov. But it could be that these guys just have a horrible stalemate. Because I could very easily see that happening. What I would give Whittaker the edge on is the kicking game. And I was watching some of Alice Grove's combat sambo bouts, and he's not a very comfortable kicker. And a couple of his opponents were able to kick decently against him. His combat sambo career is very similar to Fedor's in that he's got good throws, he's got good submissions, but mainly he's just whooping on guys who don't have very good striking. It's weird though, because the combat sambo rules don't award points for anything except like knockdowns in terms of striking. So you have to fight for the knockout if you are going to beat people up. But also its value is beyond that, because if you're beating someone up with punches, they're a little bit more skittish in how they go about getting their takedowns and things, or getting their entries. Throwback to when Frank Gotch punched George Hackenschmidt in the nose in a clinch to try and throw him off. So what else have we got on this card? In the co-main, they're making best mates Sergei Pavlovich and Alexander Volkov fight each other. You've got to lean heavy to Pavlovich in this fight, because Volkov is, you know, he's a more losing fighter generally. He's not looked too great lately. But I do like the challenge of Volkov's length for Pavlovich, because Pavlovich has just, like, he's swung on people and he's got these incredibly long arms. What is he, 84-inch reach? Yeah, 84-inch reach. Volkov's only an 80-inch reach, but he's 6'7". And in photos of them, he looks significantly bigger. Pavlovich is billed as 6'3", but it looks like more than that when they're standing next to each other. And Volkov, unlike most people above, like, middleweight, we'll talk about this with Sharon Bullitt, but has a good kicking game. And I think that's the sort of thing that could really give Pavlovich trouble. If you can survive the early onslaughts and keep him on the outside, eating those front kicks with the ball of the foot, the Kyokushin-style stuff that he brings out from time to time, you could really make his life hard. And also having those long arms is good for when he starts to close, throwing them over his shoulders, pulling him in for clinches. You're giving him a hard task because he's punching up the whole time. There's some stuff here that could keep, or could make, Volkov a significant problem for Pavlovich, especially as they know each other quite well. You know, I think a lot of what Pavlovich does is gets in there, starts swinging, and people are unfamiliar with his rhythm, they're unfamiliar with his length, they're unfamiliar with how he does things, and he hits like a truck, so the moment that he starts hitting you, it's not like you're going, right, I understand now, I'm building up a database, I'm downloading the data, Pyotr Yan style. It's like you get one strike and you're possibly out of there already. Whereas Volkov's been in training with him so long, I think that's a real advantage against monstrous hitters, people like that and Francis Ngannou. If you've had the rounds where they're playful with you, where they're not trying to knock you out every round, you've seen what they can do. The power is still going to be like numbing and terrifying if they hit you with it, but you've seen all the ways that they can try and hit you. And if anything, most fighters are less tricky when they're loading up trying to hit their big power punches than when they're just playing in the gym. Gastelum versus D-Rod, that's high up the card. What is this, the washed welterweights convention? Gastelum coming off the loss to Sean Brady. Well, he did do a cool head wrap, Gazuli or Gazoni or whatever they call it, and a win over Chris Curtis. Well, he didn't look bad, actually. But back down at welterweight, promising to start over. Daniel Rodriguez, D-Rod looked good for about two fights in a row. Oh, it was three fights. Yeah. Oh, hang on. No, four fights. He beat Mike Perry, Preston Parsons, Kevin Lee, Li Jingliang. And Jingliang was at, like, that was a sketchy decision, I remember. But then he got beaten by Neil Magny, which is never good at this stage in Magny's career. And then Ian Gary head kicked him quite easily. And he's just not been as promising as he was back then. You know, he was a guy with like two losses on his record and on a four fight winning streak when he met Neil Magny. And then because he lost to Neil Magny, we all just lost interest immediately, because Neil Magny is, you know, he's an old man gatekeeper. These are two guys who are going to do the same thing in round one that they do in round three. They're going to come out. They're not going to learn anything from each other, but they will keep hitting each other. So it could be fun. Unless Gastelum brings out that high kick again from back in the day. But are we two southpaws here? Yeah, we're two southpaws, which I kind of think Gastelum enjoys. I'm trying to think of the other southpaw. Like he knocked out Belfort, but Belfort was basically just standing there for it. Had a lot of trouble with Till, actually. And Cannoneer had success going southpaw on him as well. And, of course, he did win the fight against Chris Curtis, but it was a close decision. So maybe he doesn't have fun with fellow southpaws. Vitor Belfort was back in 2017. I believe it was a no contest due to, like, marijuana or something like that, wasn't it, too? So, yeah, these guys are just going to hang around forever. I'm not particularly keen on watching them, but, you know, it's on. And so often that is the case with the UFC. What's on the UFC? All right. Nowadays, at least. Sharon Magomedov versus Antonio Tricoli. Do you know what would have been funny? If the UFC put Askarov and Magomedov against each other and then gave Whittaker Tricoli and said that everyone's ducking Whittaker. They're like, we can't get anyone to sign on the dotted line. Give him that Dagestani hype. But I just wrote a huge article on Sharabutin Magomedov. They're calling him Sharabullet, as I said. What I love about him, kicks a lot. And nobody in these higher weight classes is kicking nearly enough. He maybe kicks too much, if I'm honest, but it's a risky style. It takes a lot of risks with being taken down, but it is absolutely exhausting. It's exhausting for him, but it's exhausting for his opponent to keep eating kicks to the legs, eating kicks to the body. I was watching these fights and I just started counting the number of sidekicks he puts in, because sidekicks go under the radar. They're like teeps. And it's one of those ones where in sparring, you know when you've been teeped and sidekicked because you're like, that's really annoying. In fights, people don't notice it from the outside because fighters don't double over and go, oh, all the time. But it does wear on them. It's physically fatiguing to be kicked in the body all the time. It's mentally fatiguing to be intercepted every time you step forward with a poke to the gut. He didn't show his goofy left hook at all versus Bruno Silva, which he was starting to use in his the tail end of his career before he got to the UFC. He's throwing that big left hook and coming into double collar tie and kneeing. Did show his double collar tie load against Bruno Silva, and it looked really good. With Islam Makhachev and who else was doing this the other day? Oh, Tetsuya Taro. I've had loads of excuses to talk about the double collar tie lately, but it's still a really powerful position. It's not quite back when Anderson Silva did it to Rich Franklin. It was like, you just pull their head down onto your knee, you know. And that's not how it works with real people. You know, they're going to stand up, you're holding their head and you're hitting them with knees while they're trying to keep their posture or trying to get on a body lock or something to stop you doing that. But it is so powerful as a position. And if their posture was already a little bit broken when you grabbed the collar tie, they're going to either be there for knees to the face, which is really bad for them, or they're going to fight their way up and really exhaust themselves. You know, look at someone like Gordon Ryan. His matches now are kind of tedious because he's better than everyone. I mean, he's got a match this weekend, but he's better than everyone he has a match against. And when it's not ADCC, he insists on like no time limit rules. And then he operates this really tedious style of stand-up grappling where he just keeps hammering on collar ties and jerking the guy's head off and wearing out their back. And you know, go do a big deadlift session or something. If you start wearing out your back, they used to think that your nervous energy existed in your back or was like sprung from your back. I remember reading a book by Earl Liederman back in the day on one of the early bodybuilding books. And Liederman? But he wrote a book on judo as well, which is why I was interested in him. But he was like, oh, scientists agree that nervous energy comes from the muscles between the vertebrae. I love stuff like that. I loved Moby Dick. Whenever they abridge it, they try and take out all the bollocks so that he's saying wrong stuff about whales. But that's the best bit of the book, in my opinion. Let's find out what 18th century people knew for sure about whales. What's your favorite part of Moby Dick, Jack? Well, I'm very fond of the opening lines. Like when you turn up to a tutorial or a seminar and you haven't done the reading. So you jump in and answer the first question. Like, I've got very strong opinions on the very first thing we're talking about. And then you cruise for the rest of the class. Oh, breaking news. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Kelvin Gastelum, probably not making weight. Classic Gastelum. The Ultimate Fighter is terrible and has always been terrible. People who say that it didn't used to be terrible are wrong. But the season with Gastelum versus Whittaker, the one clip that went viral was the coach's challenge was to run a 5K around this running track. And Rob Whittaker is a serious professional athlete who remains in shape. And he just takes off like a gazelle. And Kelvin Gastelum is like man who eats burgers every day. 8 weeks out from a fight, he starts doing sprints until he's sick. And he starts on this 5K. And he's like almost vomiting. His team are like, come on, coach. And it's a 5K. It's not that much. You know, great fighter because he's competing at a high level while doing absolutely nothing optimally. Just really meat-headed approach to his career, I suppose. So anyway, back to Magomedov versus Tricoli. Don't know anything about Tricoli. Watched his Dana White's Contender Series fight. Still don't know anything about him. He slowly took the back against someone who wasn't very good. But that might work against Sharon Magomedov. If he can corner him, if he can, because he did that along the cage in the Dana White's Contender Series fight. If he can start pressing Magomedov. This is the thing. You don't have to like smash him in the head and knock him out. You just have to keep walking onto him until he hits the fence. Because in the Bruno Silva fight, it happened a number of times. And Bruno Silva, he's an enigma because he's very not good. He's not a good fighter. But he did go the distance with Alex Pereira. So he's hard to knock out. But he did get knocked down and finished by Gerald Meerschaert and Gerald Meerschaert's glacial hand speed. But Bruno Silva came out to this fight and he's like, I'm going to stand and bang. And then he decides to try a takedown way late in the fight. And he gets it in like late in round 2 by stepping in on a kick. And he does it exactly the same in round 3. And he gets about 7 minutes of control time. But he keeps getting Magomedov runs himself onto the fence. And then he doesn't direction change. He doesn't fake. He just runs one way. He runs to his right almost every time. And Bruno Silva lets him off the hook. And then the other times he goes back to the cage and he does like a little run up to flying knee pretend, and Bruno Silva backs off into the middle of the cage. It's kind of like Michael Venom Page would sell that. He would make it like anytime you came into him on the cage, he would leap 6 feet in the air as a fake of the flying knee. And you'd go, shit, this guy might actually need my head through the ceiling if I try and step in on him while he's on the fence. Magomedov just went, go on, back up. Bruno Silva was like, oh no. And the way to deal with that, if you are struggling with the idea that someone might just be a cornered rat and leap at you off the cage, is to fake them. Just give them a shoulder feint, step back, let them fall short, crack them, step back, step in again. That's fatiguing in itself. If you let the guy move at you, give just enough ground so that he doesn't hurt you, move back in. But Dracoli's probably not doing that. He's probably getting a 2-1 decision. He will probably take Magomedov down in the third round. And everyone will go, wow, that was unimpressive. I like Magomedov. I know he's a massive dickhead outside the ring, but I do like the fact that he's fighting in a way that is pretty much unique in MMA and certainly unique above welterweight. No one is throwing kicks that frequently in rapid succession. He's throwing 2 kick combinations, 3 kick combinations. He's going kick, punch, 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 kick. Well, too many punches there because it's Magomedov and he doesn't punch, but things like side kick into leg kick or hatchet kick into body kick off the same leg. Nobody does that. Hatchet kick, by the way, is a hook kick done closed stance with your lead leg and it's brought up and down. It doesn't go across in front of the opponent. You bring it down on an angle. And what you can do with it is you can come over the lead shoulder and hit him, which doesn't do a lot of damage. It's kind of like a shit axe kick. But you can clear the lead hand and step in. And Stephen Thompson knocked out a guy with that back in Chuck Norris's, I think it was called the Long Pants Karate League. Was that the name? But it goes down as kickboxing world champion on Wonder Boy's record. Johnny Walker versus Volkan Ozdemir. New intelligent Johnny Walker, probably going to lose. New skittish Volkan Ozdemir, probably also going to lose. I don't know who loses this one more. Hack Paras versus Gordon, that's a good one. Oh, Renat's back. Renat Fakhretdinov, after being sent into career hiatus by Zaleski. And do you know how Zaleski did that? Decent takedown defense, kicks to the body. Front kicks to the body with the ball of his foot. And you didn't notice them until Renat went, oh my God, that's too many. You caught me while I was breathing in. But he'd been throwing them all fight. And they took it out of Renat completely. This guy who everyone was like, oh my God, he's unstoppable wrestling and he's got great hands. And he knocked Zaleski down in the first round. And then Zaleski just went, no, I'm going to tire you out, mate. And he did. He's fighting Nicholas Dalby, who is, he's got decent kicks of his own. Grindy old boy. Well, how old's Dalby now? Because this is his second stint in the UFC. 39, wow, still going. And he's on a 4-fight winning streak. Well done, Dalby. He's my boy. He's actually got 1 loss in like 9 fights since that Ross Houston title fight in Cage Warriors where it was a no contest due to blood on the mat, due to blood on the dance floor. But yeah, he's doing way better than his first UFC stint where he had a couple of close decisions and then he lost to Zach Cummings and Peter Sobota. So he really has improved enormously. He just beat Gabriel Bonfim and knocked him out, didn't he? TKO'd him. And that was another one. It was a guy like, this guy's hot shit. He will guillotine you. You just can't do anything to him. And Nicholas Dalby just drags him a little bit later in the fight. Wasn't always winning. And suddenly Gabriel Bonfim folds. Anything else good on there? Moon Gafarov, he's always good fun. Just non-stop, sloppy ass, swinging into wheel kicks, but he's great fun. This will be his third fight and third loss in the UFC, probably, but I like him nonetheless. And then his evil twin, Muhammad Naimov, is fighting Felipe Lima. Muhammad Naimov exclusively fights in the Middle East because he's a filthy cheat. He's the WWE heel, but man, if you watched his fight on the Abu Dhabi card, he did about 10 fouls to Nathaniel Wood. And Nathaniel Wood, that's a loss in the bantamweight, or was it featherweight? Whatever it is, that's a loss, and Nathaniel Wood's career now goes back to step one of that title hunt. What else we got? Not a bad weekend of other events, actually. We got Bellator Champion Series. Jason Jackson defending against Ramazan Kurmagomedov. Don't know where he's fighting out of. It is Dagestan, but I don't know if he's the same team as, Islam Makhachev, Ikram Alaskrov. Two Bellator fights, two wins by finish. If there's one kind of fighter I want to see Jason Jackson against, it's a strong wrestler. Because he was great against Amosov and Benson and Neyman Gracie, guys who wanted to get him down. I don't know if any of those guys were as strong a wrestler as Kurmagomedov. Amosov's pretty good, but his game is one where he's a nicely rounded fighter, but each element builds off the other. And if he can't get his jab going, if he can't get his striking going on the feet, his level changes and his takedowns aren't really that good on their own. So, yep, interesting. Paul Hughes has a fight on the card. Even though he's signed to PFL, they put him in the Bellator series for some reason. And he's fighting Bobby King. Not Bobby King Green, just Bobby King, who's on a two-fight losing streak. So, pitching him this one underarm. Sinead Kavanagh's on the card for people who hate themselves. And that looks like... Oh, Zabit's brother is on the card. Interesting. And that's about it. Honestly, not a great card. Well, they do have Shinobu Ota on the card, who's a very good wrestler who moved to MMA. And he's had a spotty career in Ryzen. 6-3 as a pro. Never taken a fight outside of Ryzen except this one coming up. And then fuck all else on that card. And then PFL 5, you remember PFL does a bad event because of the way they book themselves. They do a bad event where it's women and heavyweights. And now they're doing a good event where it's lightweights and light heavyweights. And your main event, this sounds like the chef made the menu for Slacky J, because main event, Clay Collard, Mats Bunnell. Oh, love it. I think Mats Bunnell, if he mixes in his wrestling, should be enough to get rid of Collard here. He's so strong on the mat. His his top game, his front headlock game is Peruvian, not Peruvian, his Japanese necktie. Japanese necktie is the one that works. Peruvian necktie is bullshit. That's all you need to remember. Collard's been looking okay on the floor, but it's still such a weakness for him. It's one of those ones where, like, you know that if you went into his gym and you rolled with him, he would murder you, but it's just not cutting it at this level of MMA. His striking is so much better than his grappling. Imbe Kasangane is fighting in the co-main. I hope he makes another milli, to be honest. He's actually looked really good. I watched his last couple, and he's looked really good. I think the UFC let a good middleweight get away there. Speaking of good middleweights, Rob Wilkinson's back, fighting Conan Silvera's son. Real old school reference for old MMA heads there. Conan Silvera, founder of American Top Team, Sakuraba's first, second, and only fights in the UFC. In the Ultimate Tournament, he beats Sakuraba by John McCarthy stopping the fight as Sakuraba drops in on a shot along the cage. We thought he'd been knocked down, but he hadn't. And then in the rematch, Sakuraba armbars him. And it was a big thing because not only was Conan Silvera like twice the size of him, it was a Japanese pro wrestler submitting a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, which I think was after Rumino Sato did his. He was the first Japanese fighter to submit a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. But it was very significant at the time. Hey, my boy, Yagshimurodov is fighting against Simon Byung. Alex Belisi's back. He was fun in his last one. He got battered against Imbe Kasanganai, actually. But he was trying like over wraps from the turtle. He's trying all kinds of cool stuff. We like guys who try cool stuff and get knocked out because of it. On the other hand, you got Brent Primus, who's never going to try anything cool. You got Sadabu C, who's going to be boring. Carl Albrechtsen, he's a good fun fighter. So yeah, not a bad weekend for MMA. Boxing's a little bit slow this weekend. Can't remember if there's any kickboxing on. I still have to watch that Rise fight. I said I'd talk about the Rise card and Jin Mandakuro versus Kazuki Osaki, which I'm told was very good. But there's time for that. We'll do that next week. So if you haven't read the Shara Magomedov article, I suggest you go read that and share it with all your friends because it's free. It's open. And the same with the Ikram Alaskarov one too. Couple of fun boys who we're getting a final step up in competition, at least one of them. So we'll get to know some stuff about them. And to be honest, Magomedov's competition has been so low that this could be a step up, aside from the Bruno Silva fight. Anyway, I'm your boy, Jack Slack. You know where to find all my stuff, because you're my boy, and I'll catch you next week. One of Shara Bullitt's eyes going down the shops, the other coming back with change, bless.